听力课堂，听 class.com.
Exercise 8. Listen and answer the questions in your student's book.
The United Nations. I've got mixed feelings about it. I suppose it does quite a good job. But then again, some of the bigger countries seem to use it as a way of pushing smaller countries around, you know, bullying them. I'm from New Zealand, which is quite a small country, so we're really aware of this.Don't talk to a New Zealander about the European Union. We used to have strong ties with Britain. It was our biggest market. But after it joined the European community, well, we were left with lots of problems, like finding new customers for our lamb and wool and stuff. We were all a bit bitter about what happened, to tell you the truth. Now, having said all that, I'm dying to get to Europe. Most young people try to go.I'm part Maori, but my grandfather was Scottish, so I guess I'd like to find out a bit about my roots. My friends say that lots of Europe looks the same now. New Zealand is still quite old-fashioned in comparison. Visitors say it's like Britain used to be 30 or so years ago. I don't know if that's a compliment, but I don't really want things to change too much.
Exercise 3.Neil Kinnock is talking about the British political system. Correct the summary in your student's book.
Parliament is divided into two houses, the House of Commons, which is entirely elected. Everybody in the House of Commons is an elected member of Parliament, and they're elected from 650 constituencies in the United Kingdom. Constituencies vary a little in size, but most of them are around about 60,000electors, and the political parties put candidates up for election, and the election is decided by first past the post. That is to say, the candidate with the most votes gets elected. The House of Lords is a non-elected chamber of the Parliament, and its roots go back for 600 years.
Exercise 6.Neil Kinnock talks about the House of Lords. Answer the questions in your student's book.
I think it's ridiculous in any democracy for people to be able to gain a place in Parliament simply because of the fortunes of birth. So I would like to get rid of the hereditary peers. I don't mean execute them under a guillotine. I do mean deny them the power to sit.
Exercise 7.Neil Kinnock describes the role of the monarchy.
For 300 years, Britain has had a constitutional monarchy. It is the Queen in Parliament who begins each legislative year in Parliament with the Queen's speech from the throne. The Queen's speech is written for her by the government and lists the general important items of legislation and policy which the government intends to put before the legislature, before the Parliament, in the forthcoming year.
Exercise 9. Neil Kinnock talks about his political career.
I've been involved in politics since I was about 15. I've fought as the candidate for my constituency every election since 1970. So that makes one in 1970, two in 1974, one in 1979.Then again in 1983, and in 1987, and in 1992. I'm not sure how many that makes altogether. What I have to say is, I think I'm right in saying the majority has gone up slightly every time, which makes me very happy. I've made many mistakes. I don't think that there's a person alive of 50 years of age who hasn't made mistakes. And any politician with a 22, 23-year career in politics who says they hadn't made mistakes, they're either too stupid to recognize them or too arrogant to accept them. So I've made mistakes. There are occasions on which I've spoken too long. There are occasions in which I've associated myself with causes that proved to be the wrong causes. And there are times when I would have liked to have acted much faster than I did, but the series of circumstances prevented that. And so in that 23 years, I don't think I've made more errors than most other people, but I've certainly made them.
Exercises 2 to 4. Listen to some people discussing the questionnaire in your student's book. Which choices did they make?
Healthcare and education. What did everyone put for this?
Well, I found this a difficult one to answer. In the end, I put C. I really don't think it's fair for some people to buy special medical treatment or education.
No, neither do I, so I chose E. As far as I'm concerned, everyone should be treated the same.
Oh, come on, George. That's nonsense. I believe in freedom of choice. In my opinion, that's the most important thing.
I do too. But when it comes to health, which is so important, I think everybody has to be treated equally.
But surely if I want to spend my money on private health care, that's my business.
Oh, I take your point. But suppose there are two people who both need a minor operation. Then the person who can go to a private hospital will have it done immediately, whereas the person who depends on the state has to wait.
But so it's up to them, isn't it? I mean, they can choose if they want to spend their money on clothes or cars or on healthcare.
But what about the people who don't have the money to spend? I don't think it's fair. As I see it, it's up to the state to help. Don't you realise that according to the latest statistics, the average income in the UK is...
Okay, but life's unfair. Imagine there's a terrible state school where you live, but there's also a private school which you can afford to send your children to. Would you sacrifice your children to political principles?
It is difficult. In theory, I don't agree with private education.
No, I don't either, even though I went to a private school.
And I'm against private health care and education. But if I have children, I'll want the best for them. If I've got the money to send them to a good school, then I will. I know you think that's wrong, George, but I believe parents want to do the best for their children.
So do I. I understand what you're saying. I've had the same conversation with my parents, but... if we want to improve society, then we have to start somewhere.
Exercise 5. Listen to these sentences from the conversation and repeat them. Which words are stressed? 1.
As I see it, it's up to the state to help.
2.
In my opinion, that's the most important thing.
Exercise 3. A sixth former and her teachers talk about Wickham High School. Answer the questions in your student's book.
Wickham High School is a secondary school. It's for girls only, and it's a grammar school, which means we have to pass an exam before we can enter the school.
The girls tend to sit an exam at 12 in their primary schools, and depending on the results of that exam, we take in about the top 30% of intelligence levels.
There are only 145 grammar schools in the country out of the several thousand secondary schools in the country, so it isn't typical of secondary education in this country.
There are about 1,000 pupils. There's a main school and a sixth form, which run separately.
Exercise 4. The sixth former and teacher talk about rules.
In the main school, there is a uniform. Pupils are supposed to wear a blue and white striped shirt. In the second and third years, they're supposed to wear a navy jumper. And in the fourth and fifth years, it's a burgundy jumper. It's a specially designed school jumper with the school emblem on. And they have to wear a navy skirt. At the moment, they let us wear any type of shoe as long as it's black and smart. But when I first joined the school, they made us choose between 5 different pairs of shoes, and we had to wear one of those.
There are also regulations about what they should wear in their hair. They have to wear a certain colour of ribbon or hair ornament, and they're supposed to keep their hair out of their eyes for safety reasons.
In the sixth form, they let us wear what we want to, but it has to be smart, and we have to wear skirts. But we're allowed to wear jewellery and things like that.
Exercise 5. Listen and answer the questions in your student's book.
Pupils are supposed to stand up when a teacher walks into the classroom and to remain standing up until the teacher tells them to sit down.
The main school have to stay on site during the lunch hour, but the sixth form are allowed to go outside school as long as they're back within the hour. We're not allowed to go down to the bottom of the field, and there's another area around the side of one of the buildings where we're not supposed to go either.
The perimeters of the school field are actually out of view from the main buildings, and girls may not go beyond an area where the ground dips down and they're out of sight. This is for their own safety, as well as for us to make sure that they're not breaking the no-smoking rule. The rules about smoking in the school are strict. No girl is permitted to smoke under any circumstances, either in school or on her way to and from school.
In the sixth form, there are three areas in which we can stay during the study periods. We can either go to the library, and that's a silent area, so we're not allowed to speak at all. Or we can go to the study room. We're permitted to eat and to talk quietly in there. Or we can stay in the common room, and we can do anything in there. We can make as much noise as we like.
I think the ability to conform to rules, provided those rules are accepted as reasonable and sensible, is part of being a law-abiding citizen and being able to fit in to whatever social structure you're in. I see no reason why girls should not question rules, and I would encourage them to do that. I think it does prepare them for the world of work, where there are even stricter rules and regulations in many ways, particularly in health and safety, and things that one can, must, or must not do.
Exercise 4. Joanna is explaining the International Baccalaureate to Malcolm. Answer the questions in your student's book.
Well, I've just had a look at the subjects that are offered, and I must say, there's quite a range, isn't there?
Yes, there is. But students don't have to do everything.
Oh, right. So, how does it work, then?
Well, as you can see, there are six groups of subject.
Yes.
And students have to take one subject from each group. For instance, if you look at group three, someone might choose economics.
So, what you're saying is that in each group, you choose just one subject?
That's right. Now it gets a bit more complicated.
Oh, no.
Now, three of the six subjects, the subjects taken from each group, three of these have to be offered at higher level, and the other three at subsidiary level.
Sorry, I don't really follow. Could you go over that again?
Sure. Let's say that you've chosen the subject you want to take from each group. Okay so far?
Yeah.
So what you have to do next is, what you do next is decide which three subjects you want to take at higher level. You know, the ones you want to specialise in more. And which three you want to take at a lower level, at subsidiary level.
Oh, I see. So that's what HL and SL stand for, is it?
Mm-hmm.
I think I've got it.
Right. So, as I was saying, you choose your higher and subsidiary subjects. So if someone is good at, say, maths, they take that at higher level. But if they weren't all that keen on the group three subjects, the individuals and society stuff, then they'd take one of those at subsidiary level.
It is complicated, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But I think I'm with you now.
Right. So now let's look at the language section, shall we?
Exercise 6. Listen to the next part of the story and answer the questions in your student's book.
One of the students held up his hand. And though he could see quite well why you couldn't have lower caste people wasting the community's time over books, and that there was always the risk of their reading something which might undesirably decondition one of their reflexes, yet, well, he couldn't understand about the flowers. Why go to the trouble of making it psychologically impossible for deltas to like flowers? Patiently, the DHC explained. If the children were made to scream at the sight of a rose, that was on grounds of high economic policy. Not so very long ago, a century or thereabouts, gammas, deltas, even epsilons had been conditioned to like flowers. Flowers in particular, and wild nature in general. The idea was to make them want to be going out into the country at every available opportunity, and so compel them to consume transport. And didn't they consume transport? Asked the students. Quite a lot, DHC replied, but nothing else. Primroses and landscapes, he pointed out, have one grave defect. They're gratuitous. a love of nature keeps no factories busy. It was decided to abolish the love of nature, but not the tendency to consume transport. For, of course, it was essential that they should keep going to the country, even though they hated it. The problem was to find an economically sounder reason than a mere affection for primroses and landscapes. It was duly found. "We condition the masses to hate the country," concluded the director, "but simultaneously we condition them to love all country sports. At the same time, we see to it that all country sports shall entail the use of elaborate apparatus, so that they consume manufactured articles as well as transport. Hence those electronic shocks." "I see," said the student, and was silent, lost in admiration.
Exercise 3. Michael Killingsworth talks about the training program. Answer the questions in your student's book.
Training for an American Airlines flight attendant requires 6.5 weeks. The training program includes a great deal of emphasis on emergency procedures, food service procedures, general procedures, and a great deal of customer service.
Exercise 4. Listen to part of the training program in action.
Captain Masick, First Officer Smith, and Flight Engineer Hughes has informed me that our flying time to Seattle today will be 3 hours at an altitude of 31,000 feet. Seattle is reported with fair weather. Now, we'd like to direct your attention to the video screens located throughout the aircraft for a brief message about our safety features on our 767.
Exercise 5. Michael describes the qualities flight attendants need.
The basic qualities that we look for in a flight attendant are flexibility, personality, poise, self-control. There's no way, even in 6.5 weeks of training, that we can tell you every single thing that would occur in the life of a flight attendant. There's a lot of situations that we'll share with you that our own personal experiences will share with you. We'll try to cover as much as we can, but because the job of a flight attendant is so diverse, there's no way we could answer every single what-if question.
Exercise 6. Michael talks about customer service.
When passengers are boarding the aircraft, it's very important that an appropriate greeting is used by the flight attendant. An appropriate salutation or greeting, such as good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome aboard, or we are happy to have you. I am happy to see you. I stress to my students that it's very important that you understand that communication is not just the way you speak. It's verbal, and it's also nonverbal. And by means of nonverbal, the use of your body language is so important. What do you do with your hands? What do you do with your arms? If you stand with your arms crossed, you've closed yourself off. You're a closed-in person, and you're not approachable. Versus having your hands open. When your hands are open or at your side, you're more approachable. You're open to conversation. Once you take off, the flight attendant will then perform their actual service procedures, food service, which is, and sometimes it's just a beverage service. But there's always a way of enhancing that service. It's not just delivering a beverage. It's not just handing out pretzels or delivering a sandwich. It's how you do it. It's important to remember to use proper terminology such as, may I offer you a beverage? May I offer you a snack or a meal? What else can I get you? Is there anything else I can get you? Once that procedure is completed, we have what we call a phase 3, and we call this the phase that pays. You get out and you get into the cabin and get to know the passengers and get to talk to them. At the end of the flight, as the passengers are leaving, it's important to use phrases such as, thank you for being with us today. Thank you for choosing us. It was nice meeting you. It was great to see you. It was nice getting to know you. Enjoy your day. I hope to see you again.
Exercise 8. Listen to these sentences. Which words are stressed? Which are contracted? 1.
We should have taken a taxi. We shouldn't have taken the bus.
2.
They ought to have been more polite. They oughtn't to have been so rude.
Exercise 4. Listen to these nouns and adjectives and check your answers.
Suitable. Suitability. Sensitive. Sensitivity. Adaptable. Adaptability. Willing. Willingness. Lively. Liveliness. Confident. Confidence. Calm. Calmness.
Exercise 5. Listen to the interview about training guide dogs and answer the questions in your student's book.
Now, we've heard a bit about the breeds and the early training with volunteer families. Let's move on to what goes on at the centre.
Certainly. As I said, we get the dog just before it's one, a year old. First of all, we teach it. It learns not to pull on the lead and how to cross the road and how to walk around corners. Later on, they're also introduced to the special harness you see them wearing. Afterwards, we try to teach the dog to show sense, to think for itself.
Think for itself? But it should always obey its owner, shouldn't it?
Not necessarily. Imagine the dog is given the command to cross the road when it knows it's dangerous. Obviously, we want the dog to ignore the command.
I see. And how do you go about deciding who to place the dogs with? Doesn't this cause problems?
Yes, sometimes it does. We really have to try to match the dog with the owner. There's no point matching a lively dog with loads of energy with, say, an elderly person.
Hmm. And so what happens next? Don't you just deliver it to the new owner?
Absolutely not. The blind person comes to the centre and spends around a month here. They have to get used to each other, of course. The dog has to transfer its affections from the trainer to its new owner. We have to help nervous owners as well.
So you have to be a human as well as a canine psychologist too, don't you? Right. Now, just one last question which bothers me. Sometimes when I see a blind person with a guide dog, for instance by the road or at the station, I never quite know how to help them.
Yes, there's something very important we need to remember. People should always resist the temptation to grab the harness, as this can upset the dog and the owner. It's better to go round the other side and take the owner's arm and just...
Exercise 10. Listen to these questions. A.
It's a very well-behaved dog, isn't it?
B.
You haven't been to one of the classes, have you?
C.
Didn't the trainer call you yesterday?
D.
Can't you give just a little more money for the guide dogs?
Exercise 2. Listen to Chloe Hawthorne talking to Max, a waiter, and answer the questions in your student's book.
Right, Max. Now, there are a few things I must tell you before I leave this evening. Now, you know how lively Café Chloé is, especially when there's live music.
Yeah.
Well, the people who come here to Le Jardin are older, so it's more formal, classical music and so on. You need to be a bit more distant, more respectful. People who come here like good food and are prepared to pay for it. It's not cheap and cheerful salads and pasta or steaks and frites like at the café.
Okay.
Another thing, always check the bookings. It's not like the cafe where people just turn up. And don't give anyone's table away unless they're really late, half an hour minimum. Parking round here is awful.
Okay, no problem.
When clients arrive, greet them nicely and check that they've booked. Call them sir and madam or use their surname. Never use first names. If they haven't booked, then you'll have to turn them away. It's always really busy on Fridays, but do it nicely.
Don't worry about it. It'll be fine.
Serve the food discreetly. Don't say, here you go, or enjoy. Our clients really hate that. If you have to say something, say, bon appétit. There's one thing you really mustn't do, which I have seen you do at Café Chloé. Don't scrape leftover food off the plate in front of the clients. It's really disgusting, Max.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
In terms of service, it's the same system as at the other place. The client decides how much to leave. You sometimes get someone who's a bit mean, but most customers are over-generous. If someone doesn't leave a tip, don't be rude or make a fuss.
You can count on me, don't worry.